Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Paul Charchian, Fantasy Football Hall of Famer.
That guy must really know what he's doing.
Chief Execution Officer at GuillotineLeagues.com.
He's appointing himself Judge, Jury, and Executioner.
He's not Judge, Judy, and Executioner.
He is.
Your guide through the waiver wire.
Hurry, step right up and keep following the leader.
Charge. With Dan Bernstein and Layla Rahimi on 670 The Score.
Paul Charchian joins us via the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book, as we broadcast live from the Hyundai Score Studios. Brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Charge, how nice of you to join us before everybody's last-minute fantasy football drafts.
Yeah, this is it, right? I mean, we're down to the final days, and for a lot of leagues, they always draft like the day before the start of the season, or 2 days before the start of the season, or Labor Day, or the day after Labor Day, or whatever, right in this time, because you know all the injuries, and these are the most common draft days of the entire year right here. We're on it right now.
So what last minute news, advice, just something can you give people that maybe we didn't know 48, 72 plus hours ago?
Yeah, you know, not a lot has changed in the last few hours because the teams don't change that much. We've gotten good news on Saquon Barkley, and it looks like he's going to be ready to go for the start of the season. And that doesn't mean that he's going to get a lot of work. And, you know, I expect he's going to be like 10 touches, 12 touches, and that might be it. And so when you're drafting Saquon Barkley, you're not doing it for September. You're doing it for November and December in all probability and hoping he stays upright there. You know, one of the biggest late emerging trends, we've seen big jumps out of guys, Gus Edwards and Damian Harris. For Gus Edwards, it's because J.K. Dobbins got hurt, unfortunately. For Damian Harris, it's because his quarterback, Cam Newton's gone, and that guy stole all the goal line looks. For both of those guys, I think fantasy owners haven't adjusted enough for them. They're both sitting on like 15 touchdown upside for Gus Edwards and Damian Harris, relative unknowns 3 weeks ago. But the shift here is bigger than people realize, and I'm drafting those guys as my second running back and feeling great about it.
Yeah, typically top of the first round, a lot of people are looking to draft running backs because there's so much value in them. But if you're not lucky enough to go early in your league's draft, and McCaffrey's gone and Cook gone and Zeke, all those guys are gone, who are you looking at?
First, don't even have to look running back. And totally agree with the premise of your question, by the way. After McCaffrey, Cook, Henry, Aaron Jones, Alvin Kamara, to me, those are the safe guys that I feel like, okay, those are your five picks that can go at the beginning of the draft. After that, who's ever regretted drafting Travis Kelce? Nobody. That's who. You know, Devontae Adams, Tyreek Hill. Every year, these guys are great. And so, you know, you don't have to take a running back with flaws. And there's just this myopic vision for fantasy owners. Like, my God, I have to get a running back in two of the first three picks or I'm going to be dead. And it's just not true. And we know that position gets hurt all the time. It's already happened in the preseason. We've had elite runners like Cam Akers and J.K. Dobbins go down. You know, the safety, you don't have to go lose your draft in the early rounds. You can go with other great players who always perform well, and you don't have to get running backs early.
Is there anything about the Sunday night game standing out to you as far as fantasy selections, whether it's something that the Bears give the Rams or something that you see the Bears could have an advantage with?
Well, I mean, I'd like to tell you that I like more Bears in this game, but what a brutal matchup. And I'm sure you guys have already talked about it a lot, especially within the context of, you know, Andy Dalton starting here versus Justin Fields starting here. And there are basically almost no Bears that I want to start. Allen Robinson's the only starting grade Bear that I've got. And even Montgomery worries me. And tell me if you think this is right. I'd be fascinated by your input on this. You know, last year there was nobody around to carry the ball other than him. This year, I see enough talent in that backfield between Williams and Herbert that I think there's going to be a much broader distribution of touches this season. Do you see it coming that way as well?
It stands to reason, but with Matt Stafford too, I'm just curious how the play calling is going to break down overall, because it's safe to say that Sean McVay is going to trust Stafford with a little more responsibility. So does that mean there's going to be more pass plays per game too? And then therefore, does that affect how the touches go too?
Probably. That's probably all true. And, you know, you mentioned Matthew Stafford. As a reminder, as a member of the Lions last year, he put up 402 yards and 3 touchdowns against your squad in week 13 of last year. And that was with the Lions. And now we've got this rebuild secondary with Kendall Vildor and Duke Shelley in key spots. Man, this feels like a huge opportunity for Matthew Stafford. He's my number 2 ranked quarterback for this coming week of NFL football here. I just think this is a smash start for him against Vildor and Shelley and all the great receivers they've got, Woods and Kupp. And I like that passing offense a lot. I think it's going to be a real challenge for your Bears. Do you see it differently? Does that all sound fair?
No. I think we're all kind of looking at it that way. And then looking at the 7.5-point spread and feeling like it might be worse. But I don't know. You're probably not wrong at all on that. But when you mention the Bears players that you would be willing to maybe give some attention to if you're drafting Montgomery, Robinson, maybe Fields later on, is there anybody that has late-round value?
Yeah, Mooney does for sure. Just feel like in time we're going to get a lot of attention for him, and I like the progression that we saw last year. If it weren't such a deep wide receiver class, I think he wouldn't have been overlooked as much as he was. I've got him rostered on several of my leagues. I'm not starting him against the Rams, but over the course of the season, and especially once you get to the point that we've got Justin Fields and we can utilize that big arm, I see deep plays coming to Mooney, and that's gonna help a lot. They've got to diversify the passing offense. It can't all run through Allen Robinson again. They have to, and Mooney's the best guy to diversify it with. He's clearly the second best receiver on the team.
Agreed. And we have a Thursday night game to discuss.
Yeah.
Which is something. And I always love the first Thursday night game of the year because you know at least that one's going to be good, Cowboys and Bucks. And the Cowboys with some COVID issues because Zach Martin is likely off of that game.
Yep, he will not play. They're hoping their right tackle, La'el Collins, is going to play. And it looks like he will, but that's not a certainty either. And, you know, we talk about this being a good game, but I understand there's a lot of drama here. When do we ever have a Thursday night game where one of the teams isn't even in the playoffs?
Right.
Can we dispense of the notion that Dallas is America's team? I'm so done with that. Dallas is not America's team.
Not until Jerry says you can be done with it. When Jerry tells you you can be done with it, Charge, then you can be done with it.
Boo. There's a bunch of factors working against Dak Prescott in this game. He's got to chisel off a thick layer of rust after missing most of last year and then missing the preseason, right? The preseason should have been his time to get his game back together, get on the same page with all of his receivers and everything. Then you've got his Frankenstein foot that adds a lot of questions about his mobility that has powered his fantasy prowess in years past. And then there's also this. The last time we saw the Bucs pass rush, they were turning Patrick Mahomes into a slurry. There's a lot of reasons for concern about Dak Prescott coming out hot in this first game. And so I'm a little bit nervous about what he's going to be able to do, even though I love the matchup in the slot for CeeDee Lamb against Sean Murphy Bunting. That's a positive matchup. Amari Cooper is obviously great. But you also know Zeke's going to get nothing done on the ground here if this Bucs run defense is anything like last year and they return all the same starters. Bucs run defense ranked number 1 in rushing yards allowed, number 1 in yards per carry, number 1 in fantasy points allowed, and number 2 in rushing touchdowns allowed. And if you think Zeke is so good that he's immune to all of that, listen to these runners who failed to top 39 yards against Tampa last year. And 39 is nothing, right? So these guys didn't even hit 39 yards. Clyde Edwards-Helaire twice. Aaron Jones twice. Cam Akers, Mike Davis, Alvin Kamara, David Montgomery, Melvin Gordon, Antonio Gibson. None of them hit 39 rushing yards.
That is quite a list. Like, quite. And when you think about the season Kamara had, too, my goodness.
Yes. Yep. And Aaron Jones and Cam Akers.
Yeah, that's sobering.
It is. So Zeke doesn't get a lot done here. Now, they do give up a lot of pass receptions to running backs because teams give up on the run quickly. And so Zeke will help you through the air a little bit. But that's a this is a sneaky spot for Ezekiel Elliott and the toughest matchup of his entire year right here Thursday night, 2 days from now.
So there's really nobody on that Dallas offense. I mean, you mentioned Cooper and Lamb, Michael Gallup. Anybody like that you like?
I've got starting grades on Lamb and Cooper. I've got a low starting grade on Dak Prescott and then a low starting grade on Zeke through the air. And that's it for the Dallas side of this matchup. Yeah.
Sobering. And what about Tampa?
So now this is a whole different story. Tom Brady is my top ranked quarterback for this week.
I was curious.
Positive matchups all over the field. His three wideouts, Mike Evans, Antonio Brown, and Chris Godwin, go up against Trayvon Diggs, Anthony Brown, and Jordan Lewis in the slot. And they are all sizable mismatches here. You got Godwin up against Jordan Lewis, who allowed a passer rating of 98 last year. Mike Evans up against Trayvon Diggs, mostly. He ranked as Pro Football Focus's 53rd ranked quarterback. And then their safeties, by the way. Malik Hooker, formerly of the Colts, blew out his Achilles, missed a whole year. That's a devastating injury. Don't even know what he can do. And then their other safety is DeMonte Casey, who missed last year as a COVID year. And before that was so bad, the Falcons didn't want him in their secondary and let him walk. So that's bad, too. So love the whole passing game. Fantastic matchups. The running game, though, for Tampa is always totally inscrutable with Bruce Arians because you can't know who's going to get the ball and in what quantity. And Bruce Arians doesn't even know. Sometimes he just waits to see who's got the hot hand through the first quarter. So you're guessing here, but the Dallas run defense was awful last season. They ranked 30th in rushing yards per carry, 31st in rushing yards per game. So somebody's going to have a good game here probably. But it's really, even though Fournette was dominating in the playoffs, it's a coin flip between Fournette and Jones.
That's interesting, but given the Mike McCarthy coached defenses as well, it's safe to say that the passing attack is going to be on display.
Oh, yeah. Brady's sitting on a gigantic game. Perfect. I have him graded 10 out of 10 for this.
Wow.
This is 350. 350 and 3 sounds like a very easy mark for Tom Brady to hit in this game.
You know, we were talking tight end earlier, and Travis Kelce in particular, you brought him up. Coming off an injury and in an offense that's sort of up in the air because you don't really know how long Garoppolo will be the starting quarterback in San Francisco, how do you view George Kittle, who only played 8 games last year?
Yeah, love him because he is an extraordinary talent who's on the field all the time. And injury aside, when he does play, he still averages 6 catches for 80 yards, which are great numbers for a tight end. Heavily utilized, and he's a special player. So I still love him. And in my mind, for all of those receivers for San Francisco, either Garoppolo plays pretty well and they win games and everybody's getting fed and life is good, or if Garoppolo doesn't play that well, here comes Trey Lance, and he is an extraordinarily promising young talent, and things will probably be okay that way too. So I feel like it's almost like a win-win one way or another for that passing game.
Oh, to have that calmness and confidence in that town with whoever is under center. That sounds peaceful. Regarding running
really
backs, you touched on it earlier a little bit. Who are your highest-ranked running backs perhaps this week or at least going forward in the season?
You know, I haven't quite finalized my running back rankings for this week, and so I can't give you those. You know, that's usually that's a Wednesday deal for me. I wish I could do that on Tuesdays, but Tuesday's the day we're kind of grinding up stats and trying to look at all of that stuff. So, you know, I can't give you a pat answer on that, but I'll tell you the guy that I'm most interested in seeing out of everybody. And that the running back that's at the top that went roughly first round, early second round, that's Austin Eckler from the Chargers. Because the way they used him in the past was they ran him really lightly. He'd get like 7 carries a game, but then he'd go catch 7 passes. Now they've got a whole new coaching staff, and Joe Lombardi is their new offensive coordinator. He worked with Alvin Kamara with the Saints. And if they're going to use Austin Ekeler like Alvin Kamara, game on. That guy could be really, really sitting on a tremendously special season, and I can't wait to see his utilization this week.
Are there any second-tier running backs, second-tier wide receivers we really need to pay attention to, especially for people drafting soon?
Yes. Javonte Williams from Denver is a great talent. All he has to do is get past Melvin Gordon, who's in the waning stages of a modest career. And I think sooner than later, Javonte Williams is just gonna win that job and dominate the carries, and it'll move Melvin Gordon to a more of a backup role. But when does it happen? And early on, the hope is that Williams shines early and this transition happens quickly. Vic Fangio yesterday, when asked about Williams, said that we trust him in every situation and won't hesitate putting him in the game in any situation. So that all bodes well for Javonte Williams, and I think he's among sort of tier two running backs, he's fascinating with tremendous upside because of the special talents that he showed at UNC, and he should be a goal line carrier as well for some easy touchdowns.
You mentioned Darnell Mooney earlier. Any other receiver Darnell Mooney types that we should keep an eye on?
Yeah, in that same ballpark, I am drafting guys like Laviska Shenault from Jacksonville. He is their jackknife guy who runs largely out of the slot. And when they drafted Travis Etienne, we were worried that Etienne would end up taking a lot of his role. But then Etienne's out for the year, so we don't have to worry about that. So right back on Laviska Shenault, who we like a lot. Cortland Sutton's trying to come back from that ACL injury. He's looked really good in the preseason. He's a guy you're going to get at a huge discount right now at wide receiver 40. As opposed to where he was going at this time last year when he was wide receiver 22. And if he comes back from the ACL, Cortland Sutton is a real value at that stage of the draft.
I know it's not the first place you go, but in terms of the quarterbacks, it is the young quarterbacks, and I'm talking like the first year guys, Fields, Lawrence, Lance, all of them.
Yeah.
Who would you be most comfortable going after first? If you just were dead set on, I got to have one of these young guys, which one do you go for?
Well, the safe place, Trevor Lawrence, because he's your week one starter. He's going to run a little bit. He's got good receivers to throw to. But I have Justin Fields ranked higher because I just believe that it's sooner than later. And Matt Nagy's going to find himself on the hot seat having to make this switch soon, maybe as early as next week. And so I'd rather have Fields because of the freakish rushing upside that he brings to the table that breaks open scoring systems. And I don't see a scenario where he's not starting by October, and I'll sit on Fields for a little while. If right now, let me give you an example. Right now, he's going off the board as quarterback 17 in fantasy drafts. If he were the week one starter, right now he'd be quarterback 10 because of the rushing ability that he brings, and you'd have to spend a sixth round pick to go get Justin Fields. If you believe he's going to start in a couple of weeks, well, then just draft him. You know, he's such a good value where he's going off just because he's not the week one starter when everybody believes it's just a matter of time.
Yeah, and bringing up week two is the early vote, but I like the moxie charge. We appreciate the expertise and the time.
Thanks a lot, Layla. See you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Good luck drafting for everybody who is still Paul Charchian of the Guillotine Leagues. We appreciate it. And next up, it is a football mind that I am eager and a little scared to talk to because Nate Tice bringing the knowledge, the Athletic Football Show. He of the family bloodline of the Tices, Mike Tice. And he's going to talk to us about what he's seen out of the Bears. And if it's anything like his podcast and his YouTube and his Substack, I'm a little scared. Let's all face it. Next on The Score.
This hour is brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their website, 56david.com. That's 56david.com.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Anytime they've gotten empty protection, five-man protection, they've had clean free runners on looks that there shouldn't be free runners. That's what's scary. And now you have starters playing and they're missing it. I get it. It's preseason. That's the optimist. You always go, oh, it's good film. It's good teaching film. We got it on film. Now we can teach off of it because they're in the game. But it's like you've had good teaching film for a couple weeks now. So that's got to get fixed. And that's a little scary to me that if the mental side isn't there along with the physical abilities, that can lead to a lot. And that's kind of the Bears offense the last few years.
That was Nate Tice of the Athletic Football Show. He has a horribly informative Substack. He is on Twitter as well and YouTube, and the man just simply knows his football. Ranji and Rahimi here on 670 The Score. Ranji filling in for Dan Bernstein today, and guests join us via the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. He is Nate_Tice on Twitter. Nate, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, it was kind of cool to laid out my talking points about some of the offensive stuff with the Bears. So you can see that the Bears and Justin Fields has been a subject for me and Robert on the podcast a lot this offseason.
Man, that Athletic Football Show where you preview the NFC North and you illustrate next to each other, I think you did it on purpose, the Bears and the Packers' respective offenses. When you describe the Packers' offense, that sounds exactly like what Matt Nagy wants to be viewed as. The contrast is ridiculous.
And that's the thing is,
station is participating in the test of the Illinois Emergency Alert System. This system was developed to provide information to the public during emergencies. This was a test.
The Packers offense when you have a quarterback like number 12. So you can kind of run anything under the sun. And that kind of brings us all the way back to the original point, is that's why I'm so high on Justin Fields, is because that's what you hope you can do. Because when you get a quarterback, it kind of makes everything look pretty.
Just to backtrack a moment, bigger picture stuff here. We have been, at least I have been, I think a lot of other people too, wondering if the inept offense they've had up until this point has been a function of Mitch or a function of play calling, and then maybe Nagy would be better if he had a better quarterback and he just, you know, tampered things down a bit because he didn't have the guy he really wanted. Do you have any idea which is true? Is it just that maybe he doesn't, he's not quite as good, or is the quarterback not good enough? What exactly is it?
Yeah, the players make plays, and so it always going to come down to personnel. It's Andy Reid ran a lot of fun offenses for years and years and years, and no one talked about him as an offensive guru until he had Patrick Mahomes. And that kind of like sums it up nicely, I think, is that if you have these players, they're going to all of a sudden you become anointed as a guy, or anointed as, oh wow, he runs a lot of good stuff, because the players make it look good. So I would say it's always good and bad. It is on the players. It's on the coaches to kind of put them in a position to succeed. I'm sorry. And of course that's on them too. So like, it's like a little column A, a little column B. It's a little bit of cop out answer, but it is going to be on the players. And when you have a Mitch Trubisky who's limited in some aspects, that's where, getting back to my first point, kind of going with having a game plan that kind of blends with itself would make sense more. And so if you had maybe do a percentage, it's like 70% on the players, 30% on the coaches. It's almost, honestly, you can look at it like a jockey on a horse. It's like, the horse is going to be talented and win the race, like, but the jockey can lose you the race. And I think that's a good way to look at the coach as an NFL coach, is a lot of these players are going to dictate how things look. We've gone years and years and years. We're just coming out of it, where defenses across the NFL were trying to copy what the Seahawks were doing and going like, oh, we just got to run that cover three. We're just going to run that cover three. That all the coach, Dan Quinn's going there. Gus Bradley's going somewhere. You know, like Chris Richards going somewhere. All these guys are getting picked because they're going to run the Seahawks defense, but they didn't have Earl Thomas with them and Bobby Wagner and Richard Sherman and Michael Bennett, like, and all these amazing role players, KJ Wright. It's like that the players are going to make your scheme look really good. And so that's combining it together. It's like, that's why I've been so high on Fields, is because I want to see what Nagy could do with him when he has a guy that's going to make it look like an A-plus scheme, as opposed to, maybe a B player running it back there.
But you bring up some really good inherent points about what happens by design and what happens before the snap. And we talk about empty sets. That's something that has been a focal point out of what we've seen out of Justin Fields. If there's something to learn, something to work on in this time before he ends up being the starter, recognizing the empty sets, what's going to happen there. And you talked and illustrated the line design and how pressure comes from certain places, giving credit to guys like Jason Peters, and how even from before the snap, sometimes the idea of the scheme and how the line is going to block gives people a disadvantage from the word go.
Yeah. And that's exactly right. That you're putting them in a position to succeed. And that's, I love that you brought up the Jason Peters thing, because that's kind of like a nice little example of what a good player can do for you. That even if you're not called the right thing, that put them in a good spot, that they can still help out, like he did on that play that you're bringing up. Yeah, those empty protections, and this is why I've actually ragged on the Bengals a little bit, especially this week. We did the AFC North preview, and Bengals fans have not been happy with me. but they were trying to put a lot on Joe Burrow, because Burrow is extremely smart and very accurate. And so the coaching staff, for better or for worse, was like, okay, well, he's good at it. Let's put him in empty. When you're in empty and with 5-man protections, you're putting a lot on the quarterback to be right, because the clock is just faster. It's like you have 2 seconds to make the right decision. And that's why it's a lot easier when you have a guy like Patrick Mahomes again, or a Josh Allen, or even a Russell Wilson, guys that can create with their legs a little bit too, because they become their own check down. And that example with the Bears, and why I illustrated it, was because I've now, all 3 weeks of the preseason, they had a clip where they're in 5-man protection or empty protection, however you want to put it, where there's no running backs, no tight ends helping the 5 offensive linemen and quarterback, and they let up a free runner on a blitz, which it happens when you're in those protections. That happens. Like, that's just the name of the game. But those looks were ones where it shouldn't have happened. And that was kind of what I you played the clip at the beginning of right before I came on, it scared me a little bit, because it was, if it happens once, it's like, okay, it happens. It's teaching tape. And I said that in the thing, but it's like, it happens every single week, and it wasn't backups. It was the starting center. You know, it was 3 starting offensive linemen. They still missed the look, and it wasn't that hard of one. And I know some of those offenses put a little on the quarterback to guide the protection as well. But you have a rookie quarterback in the preseason. It's like, you're not going to have your center do anything. Like, is the center just gets to hang out and not change anything? So that was it's the chicken and the egg, or just what is the root cause of it all. And that's why it's like, Jesus, is that, if they can't even handle that, imagine when they play real defenses that are actually bringing real stuff that's like trying to design to be tricky. So that is why I also want Fields back there, is because he can create actually a little bit, and because some of those O-line woes might be schematic as opposed to just personnel.
Real defenses with guys like, say, Aaron Donald.
Aaron Donald might be a little scary to go against. they wouldn't even have the blitz if you have Aaron Donald. That's actually the scary part. That's when personnel comes into effect.
So when Andre Smith blew him up, and I know it was the fourth quarter, so it wasn't, you know, the starting line that you're going to see, and, you know, Fields' head rolled off in the helmet and it rolled away and he had to go reattach it.
Diallo, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was empty protection too, right? I mean, there was just 5 on the line. I don't think there was a tight end who was lined up there either. So is that on him? Is it on them?
That was the Bills one, and was like, it was funny. On Twitter, that became the one where everyone was trying to show off how much they knew about protection, including myself. And that's the one where it's like, how the play played out, it was on Fields because he's hot off that guy. But how the look was, it was a very easy look for the offensive line or the center or the quarterback to change the protection to the other side. And that was the one that, you know, stuck out in my head. And they had one the week before that, and I'm blanking on who they played in the preseason game before that or after that. But then the Titans one, the most recent one, where Jason Peters kind of saved the hit a little bit. Fields gets a ball out, so it didn't matter. But that's why I was like, shoot, this happened again? that a guy came in clean against this? That it's like the quarterback just got clotheslined the week before, like your new franchise quarterback, and then the next week you're going to let it happen again, and this is with the starters? But that one, it was they shifted their right. So those 5-man protections, the line, the center, one of the guards, one of the tackles will half slide away from the running back side. And six-man protections are the same way, just you include the running back in the math. And that's the standard call. So if I were just came out and I was like, trips right, 68, okay, the line is sliding to the right, the back is releasing to the left, okay, we're good. But you can adjust that, and you can change the mat and change where the half slide goes just to make it easy on everybody. And that's why those were really, like, because they weren't, like, tough looks. Everybody was shifted over to the opposite side of where the protection was going. I think the one where Fields got his head taken off, the line was sliding left to nobody. And it was like they had four defenders to the right, and it just didn't make sense to me. And it obviously didn't make sense to a lot of people, including Justin Fields is probably asking the same thing. But yeah, those are the ones that are concerning. And if that, and I know how much empty five-man protection that Nagy would like to run, because he likes to run a lot of stuff that Andy Reid runs, and he likes to run a lot of five-man protection stuff. But that's the scary part. Fields will get the ball out, but it's like you can just save hits, and that just matters over time. You might have a couple where it's like, hey, you got the ball out, who cares? But the process has got to be good with those.
And it was Miami, Buffalo, and Tennessee. And the Buffalo game was interesting to me just to see what Mitch Trubisky was going to do with a different team and with a different offense. And I think he did look really good. But I think it also exposed a lot of what we've seen the flaws in that Bears offense to be. You and Robert Mays talked about receivers running short routes too. And we've talked about that ad nauseum here in Chicago. The idea that receivers aren't past the chains in crucial situations on third downs. What were your observations, not just of the line, but some of the scheme you're seeing? And I know RPO is going to add to this a little bit, but how to balance all that?
Yeah, and that's just a technique thing. That's just a detail thing. And that is one of the more frustrating things can be is with receivers and tight ends running routes short. Because even me not being in the building, like, I can kind of just that's how bad it was. It was so obvious that I don't need the playbook to go, no way he's run the route right there. You know, it's like some people teach it at 7 yards, some people teach it 9, some are 10. But it was like those routes, the examples we talked about, were so blatantly short that's like, ooh, that's scary. And so that's just the technique thing and detail thing. That is like, hey, we have to have the right foot up for the receiver. That is like, hey, you got to get all of 8 yards or all of 10 yards or all of whatever they're teaching for those routes. And what happens with that, actually, it was kind of ticking me off. I've become such a Justin Fields defender before he's even played a game, because the criticisms about him so far, I just don't see are justified. Like, my criticisms for him are like, all right, you don't have to be so perfect. And also just the pre-snap operation as far as like the protection stuff, which is like 99% of rookie quarterbacks. So it's not anything I've been concerned about. And people are saying like, oh, he holds on to the ball too long, he's staring down the guy. It's like, well, that's what the route is. Of course he's going to look at it because he's planting and throwing. Those routes, that's just a technique thing. I think it was Mooney was the receiver, and I could be blanking on it right now, but yeah, it was Mooney. Mooney and then someone else, and I think he might have been cut for a good reason. They were running the route at like 4 yards and 3 yards. I know for sure it should have been a 6-yard route, and how I know that is because no route in football other than a flat route and a crossing route are taught to be run at 3 yards. Like, you just know that. And it's a 3rd and 6, and the receiver's short. They ended up getting it. But that's where it just makes it harder on everybody. The quarterback feels late. The receiver has less room to work with. Like, just all that stuff. Nothing, just kind of, they don't get the separation they need on the route design, because that's why everything's tied in together. The protection, the quarterback's footwork, the receiver's route depth, everything's tied in together, because it's just a timing based. Like, I'm not going to be able to, as a quarterback, see everything perfect. I'm going to assume you're going to be at this spot at this time. So you're throwing to a spot. If a receiver's short, he's early. And then all of a sudden I'm throwing behind him. I have no idea where he's at. Like, that's why it happens all the time, but every offense in the world. But when it happens over and over and over, it adds up. And you can, if you have good players, you can overcome it, like the Jason Peters example. But it's bad. It makes it harder than it has to be. Even if you don't have the talent that you want, at least do those detailed things, because it'll just make your life easier just for everybody.
You would think so. And with that optimism, I'm going to be terrified for the next several days getting ready for this Rams game. The knowledge, the perspective, the background, Nate Tice, we appreciate it so much. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you guys so much for having me. This was fun.
It was scary, but fun. Nate Tice, the Athletic Football Show, also on Substack and on Twitter, a man of many talents and many mediums. You really need to check it out. I can't wait to tell Dan about that podcast because I think he's going to, I don't know that it's going to sit well. Chris Ranji, it's time we fight a battle.
Okay.
And we have to fight it together against a lot of people.
Against each other or against?
Well, we fight a battle against each other every day. Let's be honest.
Yeah. So we're teaming up on this one.
We have to actually team up. And not just to defend Ties till 4.
Oh, Ties doesn't need any defense.
I haven't been there in
Ties
a long
is
time.
Fine. It's... Kyle Farnsworth might need some defense.
I don't think so. I've seen that guy in person. I think he works out and stuff. Just don't tweet. They're yelling at us to go to break. Chris, Ranji, and I fight a battle that actually has a result that is going to affect the show this week. Next.
Who you crapping?
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Okay, Chris Ranji, I have a question for you.
Let's hear it.
When did it become cool to hate Ted Lasso? I like four things, okay? It's been a really tough couple of years, our void years. And yet, people are hating on one of the things that makes me happy. Am I a simpleton? Am I not smart enough? Can I not just like something that's fun and enjoyable? What is happening?
I don't really know. Because here, when I watch Ted Lasso, and I consider myself to be relatively intelligent, I might be lacking in some areas, and that's
debatable.
Okay. But for the most part, I'm reasonably smart. Hey, I passed the ACT. It was pass fail, right?
Is that how that works?
I don't think so. At any rate,
yeah!
when I watch that show, all I get is enjoyment out of it. And I'm not always into like the overly sappy, everything's great TV shows, movies all the time. But every now and then there's one that just hits. And that one just hits right. Like, and I know the criticisms have been, well, it's not that funny this year. I disagree. I find myself a lot of times getting a good chuckle throughout the course of a show. It happens a couple of times a show still. And it's probably because a lot of the stuff they do it's adorable to me. I feel like Ted Lasso, the show, is adorable. And I never, when it's over, I'm upset there's not another episode for me to watch because I'm all the way caught up.
Yes.
So, yeah, I want to be able to watch more, and I want to be able to watch them in succession. I don't want to have to wait till the following week.
And it's not stupid. We assume you're all dumb, and we're going to make these bad jokes, humor that you get on a lot of sitcoms that I swear networks are trying to force down people's throats.
Yeah.
It's not a bunch of cliched humor like, you're a man, 25 to 54, let's make typical man jokes based on your demographic and assume nobody else watches. That is not Ted Lasso. Ted Lasso just assumes you want to watch because it's interesting.
I think this year's a little bit different, too, because I think season one, they weren't sure if there was going to be a season two. So it felt like they wrote it for 1 year. Now they're getting into more character development. And I know this is a bit of a stretch, but it reminds me of how The Simpsons started, where the first few seasons were about Bart. And then when they started focusing on the depth of the characters around The Simpsons is when the show really took off. And that's what we're seeing this year with Nate and with Coach Beard and with Roy and all those things. It's less about Ted and more about the people around him now. And I think that's it's making the show deeper. Maybe there's not so many knee slappers as there was last year, but the show is stretching its legs and showing its depth now.
And I also appreciate the fact that there is a part of that discussion that is about flawed characters and mental health and how, you know, talking about stuff is a good idea. I know that that's being pushed on a lot of people right now, and we are the anxiety show after all, as I have anxiety about getting to break on time for Lawrence Holmes. But all we're trying to say is Ted Lasso is an amazing show. And can I announce it, Jay? Can we announce the news? Brendan Hunt is coming on the show on Thursday, Coach Beard. How cool is that?
That's great.
That's thanks to a texter. A texter reached out to us and said that he was related to him. And I was like, can we have him on the show?
Yeah, you excited, Ranji?
Yeah, you could have either done that today or next Thursday.
Listen, Ranji, we had to scare people about the Bears.
Instead, you're gonna let a guy who hates the show interview him, which is going to be a lot of fun.
He was actually scheduled for today, and I moved him to Thursday. That is a true story.
We're trying to get Dan on board.
I want to get him on Twitch, too.
And And I love that we all call him Coach Beard, because here we are joking about how coaches want to be called coach, but we all just call him Coach Beard, do we not?
Just do me a favor and tell Coach Beard that I think his show is charming.
Aw. And did I hear he went to Illinois State?
He did?
I don't know. Somebody said that on Twitch. I'm sorry, Twitch. I have not kept up with you guys as much today because I got to concentrate and such. Not that I don't concentrate during the show normally. Heck no. Oh, I'm a minute 30 late to break. Well, while we look that up, we transition with Lawrence Holmes next. I really hope it's not as bad as the last time we did this.
He is a Redbird.
Wow.
The White Sox are one of the hottest stories in Chicago sports and destined for the postseason. Sox fans, all of our shows and baseball experts are talking Sox like Steve Stone.
Luis, he's in the Mike Trout class, the Tatis class, as far as a guy who can do pretty much everything.
And Ozzie Guillen.
The bullpen built to win. The bullpen built to be in the World Series.
We cover all of Chicago's teams on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.